We get things underway by welcoming into the program an actress who has starred for several seasons as Mary Stone on The Donna Reed Show, for a number of years as Christine Armstrong on Coach. She took the song Johnny Angel all the way to the top of the Billboard charts in 1962. We are thrilled to welcome Shelley Fabre to Downtown. Shelley, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Rich. I'm very honored to be on your show, and thank you very much.
Well, you know, we've been bothering your husband, Mike, for several years, so we thought we should spread it around.
Well, I appreciate that very much. I must say, he's only said the nicest things about you, so thank you from him.
I'm glad to hear that. Well, I want to talk about your remarkable career in the business that started at a very early age. Is it true you began, in a sense, as a fashion model at the age of three?
Yes. It's. I probably wouldn't call it a fashion model, but yes, I was. My sister and I were both part of... there was a designer who lived very close to where we lived in Hollywood, and she had a beautiful salon, and she wanted children in her lineup. And she went around to the neighborhood and asked all the mothers if they'd let their kids be in a modeling show. And my mother said yes, and that was it. I was 3 years old, my sister was six, and we started right then. So it's been a long, long time.
And you were doing television, you were doing movies, and one of your first big films was Not Bad, when you're co-starring with Rock Hudson in Never Say Goodbye.
That's right. He was such a nice, nice man. It was a lovely, lovely experience. I look back on it with great fondness, and to him as well. He was just, as I said, a very sweet man.
You were also in one of the iconic television productions, Our Town, which featured Frank Sinatra and Paul Newman. And if I remember right, it was for that specific production that the song Love and Marriage was written.
That's right. The writers were Sammy Kahn and Jimmy Van Heusen, names that I'm sure most everybody knows. And yes, they wrote four songs for it, Love and Marriage and the one called The Impatient Years, but Love and Marriage is the one that everybody that does remembers that one. It was a great song, and it was woven into the show. That is my favorite American play. I just think it's absolutely wonderful. It's so moving, and I didn't know anything about it at the time. I was young, and it just had not come into my frame of reference yet, but I fell in love with the show, and I was, to this day, I'm so proud to have been part of that. And it was, yes, it was Frank Sinatra, Eve Marie Saint played Emily, and Paul Newman played George. So it was, and wonderful character actors were in the show, too. Sylvia Phil and Ernest Truex, husband and wife in real life, and they played husband and wife in a ton of things. Anyway, it was a remarkable experience. I was scared to death because it was being done live,
right.
And but I did live through it, so I'm very happy that it's there to be seen by some people at some time.
You got the role at, I believe, the age of 14 as Mary Stone on The Donna Reed Show, and began shooting in the summer of 1950. I believe I was a whopping 11 days old when you began shooting.
Oh, my gosh. Is that amazing? Well, how have you been since then?
It's gone by very quickly.
Yes, that's right. 1958 is when we started shooting the show. And, yes, I turned 14 in January, and we started on July 14th. Our first day of shooting was Bastille Day, July 14th, 1958. So we're coming on 60 years now, I think. So that's also quite an amazing memory to have and experience to have.
The show airs on cable here every day. And, of course, during the quarantine, a little more time on our hands. And I've been watching the show pretty frequently. And sometimes the sitcoms from the 50s and 60s get that rap of being a little bit unrealistic. And, yes, things resolve within 30 minutes. We know that. But it's a very well-done show. The writing is terrific. The acting is wonderful. And I find the relationships to be pretty honest. And the characters are real. They're not caricatures.
That's absolutely true. It's one of the things that we were all so proud of. And as time went on, I understood more and more what the kind of shows that you're talking about that were on then and are still on now, even more so now, that are really they're not character driven at all. It's three lines and a joke, and then three lines and a joke, and we always prided ourselves, and I have to lay this directly at the feet of Donna Reed. She was an enormous talent, and she was very, very proud of the show and was very insistent that that it be a real show. And it turns out that the four of us who did the show, Donna, Carl, Paul, and myself, we really did become a family. We really, the love and the enjoyment of each other, and then the aggravations between the brother and sister, Mary and Jeff, that was all very real. It was based in reality, and I agree with you. I don't see the show out here very often, but every so often something. And through the years, as I traveled around the country for Alzheimer's Association, I would walk into a hotel room and the TV would go on, and I'd suddenly realize that I was saying the lines along with it would be a rerun of the Donna Reed Show. So it was amazing. It was such a great experience. Donna became my second mother, absolutely. And Paul and I are still absolutely brother and sister, and have been for all these years. And Carl was adorable and kind, and he was a lovely Shakespearean actor, and he was very, very, I'll say, too knowledgeable of acting to be doing something that wasn't good. And so the Donna Reed Show was a perfect fit for him because he was so handsome and had such a good doctor essence to him. Anyway, and there was nobody like Donna Reed. She was, as I said, she was my second mother, and she was a woman of enormous integrity and kindness, and she just, I don't have enough words. I still carry her with me every day. I still hear her giving me, little tips about things to do or not to do and to speak up for myself and all those sort of things. I was very, very blessed to have been cast in that show because of, certainly professionally, it was a very good thing, but more than that, personally, it was a huge influence on my life and remains so today.
Paul Peterson has been a tireless advocate for child actors through the years. How did you get through the experience of, you said, starting at 3 years old? How do you get through that with your sense of self intact?
Well, it's I was very lucky to have the parents that I did, and that they were very just determined that my sister was working at that same time, and that we would both stay just sort of grounded, you know. There are ways that it's referred to now, but the best way to say it, I think, is that we were grounded in reality. You know, we still had our home chores, and we went to school, and et cetera, et cetera. And they were just determined that we would have as normal a life as possible, given the structure that we were in, which is not very normal to be an actor and be going to school and being on a hit television series and that sort of stuff. But they were adamant that we stay very, as I said, very grounded. And it is true that Paul has, he started this organization called, A Minor Consideration. And it's been going on now for years and years. And he felt very, very strongly that, and he's right about this, it's very, very difficult to be an actor, period, is very difficult. But to be a child actor has other desires and needs, things that need to be answered. And it just doesn't happen for most kids. They're not lucky enough to get in with such wonderful people as Paul and I both did. And Paul was determined that he would do something to help other kids. And the idea of a minor consideration was that It would be for kids who became well-known when they were youngsters. And then what usually happens is they grow up as we do, and they would not be working anymore. And it was very, very, very hard transition to make, to be, because you're so taken care of, and people are always asking if you're okay, if you're all right, etc. All very, very nice things, but it sets up an unreal expectation. So that when you're through working, when you're not hired anymore, as a child, because, you know, children think that they're the center of the world anyway, whether they're working or not, and it becomes very hard to understand what happened to all of those people who every day were saying, "Shelley, how are you? Paul, how are you? What's, you know," just they were totally cognizant of us and tried very hard to be warm and loving to us. And in essence, the day the show stops filming, in essence, those people disappear. Now, what happens is that they go on to do other shows, which you now understand. But as a teenager, as a young person and a teenager, it's very hard to understand. It just, everybody was there, and then they're suddenly not there. And so Paul made it his business to start this organization where he has devoted his years and years of his life to helping kids who had tough times getting through. And there's a reason why you hear of so many kids who are child stars who go on and have a rough time. They get involved with drugs and with alcohol and just make all sorts of bad choices. And it does have to do with the person themselves, but it more has to do with the life that they've been leading. You know, they're catered to, and they're anyway, all the things that don't happen after you're through working. And so it's hard, and Paul has done a magnificent job of helping other kids and making sure that they know that they're not alone, that most of us have gone through the same thing. And he's wonderful. I'm so proud of him and what he's done with his life. It's been remarkable.
We're talking with Shelley Febre here on Downtown. Was it Donna Reed's husband, Tony Owen, who, well, let's say, persuaded you to record Johnny Angel?
Yes, yes. Put those quotation marks around persuaded me. Yes, he mentioned to Paul Peterson and to me, he said, "Oh, I have a great idea," because at this point, Ricky Nelson was, of course, doing Ozzy and Harriet. And he started singing, and he was, you know, a teenage star right then. And television itself is sort of a business of lemmings. You know, if something works well for one group, they say, "Oh, well, we should do that." So Tony saw that Ricky Nelson had become a big recording star, so he came to Paul and to me, and he said, "We have a great idea." He said, "Next year on the show," he said, "we're going to have each of you sing some songs, and we're going to record them, and we'll put out the records." And I literally can still feel my head kind of exploding at the time that he said that. And I said, "Oh, Mr. Owen," I said, "yes, that's a very good idea." I said, "But I'm so sorry." I said, I can't do that." And he said, "Why not?" And I said, I can't sing." I said, "Now, Paul is a wonderful singer. He'll be great." I said, "But it's not something I can do." And so, oh, a while later, he came up to me and he said one day, he said, "Shelley," he said, do you enjoy being on the show?" And I said, oh, I was kind of stunned at the question, but I said, "Oh, yes, Mr. Owen." I said, I love being on the show." And he said, "Ah, then sing." And that was it. I sang. And then the amazing thing happened. It turned out to be the first record was Johnny Angel, and nobody could believe, myself most of all, that it became a hit. And I've had so many interesting experiences in my life, and that was certainly one of them.
I understand when you went to do the final recording of it, you get into the studio and you look around, and we had Hal Blaine on the show a few years ago, and
it was
the Wrecking Crew working as the musicians for you.
Yes, that's right. It was unbelievable. I looked around, and yes, there was Hal Blaine. Glenn Campbell was one of the guitar players on the record. I mean, just the names that are known by people in the business who know about who those people were. I mean, I would hear them say, "This is the thing that always made me laugh." It would be the end of my session, whatever I was recording at that time. And then the musicians would talk to themselves, you know, in between takes and stuff. And I'd hear these kinds of conversations. Somebody would say, "Hal, are you going over to Ella's recording session?" He said, "No." He said, "I'm doing Frank's later." He said, "So up." And you know, you didn't need to listen for very long to understand who they were talking about. And it was just great. And they were so sweet to me. I was so terrified the entire time I was recording, but they were all they were just wonderful, wonderful to me.
I'm a big fan of The Twilight Zone, so anytime we have somebody on who appeared in an episode, I have to ask, so what was your experience of doing Black Leather Jackets?
That's right, Black Leather Jackets. It was a great experience. I say that about everything. I'm sure there were some bad experiences, but I don't remember them very much, and some not great people, but that's really minor compared to the people that I met and that I got to work with. The Twilight Zone was very popular at that time, not as popular as it ultimately ended up being, but it was, you know, a great storyline. It was Lee Kinsolving, a very, very wonderful young actor at that time, and he played the main rider of the motorcycles that came into our little small town, and I fell for him, and he fell for me, and you know, he was an alien, so there was no future for us. But it was very exciting, and I to this day, I have actually a funny story about it. When Mike and I were still just dating, we hadn't gotten engaged or married or anything at that point, and Mike and his first wife had split up, and neither of Mike's kids, Aaron and Mike, were all that thrilled with me coming onto the scene. Now, their mother and father had been divorced for quite a long time, but they still, you know, kids still want their parents to be together. So they just weren't all that crazy about me, and I kept wanting to say to them, "I'm honest to God, I'm really a nice person. You know, you just have to give me a little bit of time to get to know me." Anyway, one day I went over to Mike's house, and he had this little breakfast room area, and I walked in, and Mike, his son, was sitting at this table in the breakfast room, and he looked up at me, and he was just getting to that age of being, "Hello, I'm cool, and you're not." You know, that was the sort of attitude of everything. He was very sweet, but it was just very funny. Anyway, he looked at me, and he kind of looked up from this big book that he was reading, and he said, "Shelley," he said, you, he said, I know you're an actress." He said, "But he said, "Have you ever heard of The Twilight Zone?" And I said, Yes, I have." And he said, and he looked back down at the book, and he said, you weren't in an episode of The Twilight Zone. You didn't act in one, did you?" And I said, "Yes, I did." And he said, "You did?" And I said, "Yes." And then he looked back down at the book again, and he said, "Were you in the episode called Black Leather Jacket?" And I could see my worth going way, way up in his estimation. It was the beginning of him having something to do with me. It was very, very funny. He just could not, and to this day, still has a hard time believing that I was in the Twilight Zone. But I was, and it helped me a great deal with the kids.
Shelley Fabre with us on Downtown. You did three movies, more than anybody else, with Elvis Presley. And I'm trying to imagine what it must have been like the first time you met him and he came into the room. Did it sort of take the air out of the room when he walked in?
Yes, it did. It was an amazing experience. We were actually, it was the first day of filming, and I hadn't met him before this, and we did have dance rehearsals where the choreographer was a wonderful dancer by the name of David Winters, and Tony Basil, who is his assistant at that time, was his assistant teaching me.
Tony Basil, who did Mickey later on, right?
Yes, 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 absolutely. She was fabulous. She is fabulous, but she was really, I'd never met anybody quite like Tony, and she was just a great, great dancer, and very kind to me, because I was scared doing all of it, but I was as scared as I was singing. How much more scared I was doing the dancing. Anyway, but Elvis wasn't there for any of the rehearsals. There was another man, very talented man. His name was Lance Legault, and he was Elvis's like dancing. He could move like Elvis. He just could do all of the numbers, and he played Elvis in the dance rehearsals. And nobody was Elvis, but it ended up being like working with Elvis, because he had done so many movies as Elvis in the rehearsals that he was incredibly good. So I had never met Elvis, so we're on the set for the first day, and I'm on the set itself. We're getting ready to shoot, but he's not there yet. So all of a sudden, something happened, and everybody kind of stopped talking and sort of looked around, and then I sort of followed where they were looking, and I couldn't believe it. Now, I have to stop and say here, I was not a huge Elvis Presley fan. I liked him, and I loved his music, but I wasn't one of those, you know, one of the screaming fans of his. That wasn't I loved Jimmy Stewart at the time, so my taste was somewhat different. But this man came walking onto the set, and it is true, he sucked the air out of the room. There was a sense of him that was just so powerful, and he was sweet and charming to everybody. He was very, very, very kind, but very nice and very accessible. But I just couldn't believe it. I found myself thinking, this doesn't sound like it was such a great thing to say to yourself, but I went, oh my God, it's Elvis Presley. And I couldn't believe it. And he was walking over to start talking to me, because we were going to be in the scene together. And I just thought, oh my God, I can't do this. Anyway, it was quite something.
And you became very good friends, and it seems like a big part of that was the fact that you were a newlywed at the time, so you didn't have to deal with any of the romantic interest, and you could just be people.
That's right, and that's exactly right. And I had just gotten married just before we did started the show. We were married June 7th of 1964, and we started working like June 17th or something like that. And you know how you meet certain people, and you just from the kind of get-go, you say, you know, hi, and you just feel as though you've known that person, you know, forever, and you just sort of click. And if one has an experience, it's sort of hard to understand, but if you ever have, or just somebody that you just like immediately, well, that happened, I would say, for the two of us. We just sort of clicked. And yes, absolutely, there was no romance between us. It was just that we really, really liked one another enormously, and we ended up doing three pictures together. So they were great experiences. They were never great movies. They were simply great fun to make. We had a wonderful time doing them. Really wonderful.
I have to ask you about a TV movie you did, because I don't know, however old I was at the time, a teenager, but I think it was the first time I cried at a movie, but then felt bad about it. But then I realized all my other dumb guy friends were crying too when you played Brian Piccolo's wife in Brian's Song.
That's right. I was honored to play Joy Piccolo in that incredible movie. I can't hear the opening few bars of the music that starts at the very top of the show. And as soon as I hear that, I'm already gone. I start crying. It just is so, it's such a powerful movie. Jimmy Kahn was so fabulous, and Billy Dee Williams was extraordinary. Everybody who was in it was just great. And it's such a moving moving story. And, you know, when you're moving, doing something like that, none of us had any idea. We all knew that it was a good script. I mean, you could just read it and kind of go, oh, well, this is, you know, this doesn't come along very often. But you didn't have any idea that it was going to have the life that it had. And also, it was one of the first movies of the week, movies for television.
Right.
So it didn't have any, you know, built-in audience for it. But word got out about this show, and obviously it became a huge hit. And in fact, they ultimately released it as a movie.
Right.
Movie. And I got to go to Chicago, and I was a strange experience. I was sitting next to Billy Dee Williams, watching the movie with him, and it was unreal. It really was. It was a great experience. I keep saying those same things all over again. It's true.
Well, another TV movie that was, and I imagine, a very good experience for you was Memorial Day, working with Mike Farrell.
Absolutely, absolutely. That was and also a wonderful, wonderful movie, and was very highly held in high regard by a lot of people. And again, I was thrilled to be able to do that. And yes, people remember that very fondly as well.
And am I right that I remember from Mike's book that you got married in your aunt Nanette's garden?
That's right. We were married in her garden, her backyard, and she has a beautiful backyard that she was a great gardener, and it was gorgeous. And yes, we were married there. It was really beautiful. We were married just as the sun was setting, and she lived in the Pacific Palisades, and it was a beautiful garden, a beautiful area of town, and yes, there we were getting married.
You had a wonderful run on one of the best series of the late 80s and the 90s. Coach was such a great cast. You earned a couple of Emmy nominations for your role as Christine Fox, and that was just one of those terrific comedy ensembles.
Thank you very much. On behalf of everybody who was in the show, I thank you. I felt the same way. We all did. We loved the show, and I thought it was just wonderfully done. It was also extraordinarily well written and produced, and just we cared about it so much. We did it for 9 years, and I still run into people nowadays who say, oh God, you know, the show that I really loved the most, they said, was Coach. And it always thrills me, because it was a funny show, and it was a tender show, and because two of the people, particularly Craig T. Nelson and Jerry Van Dyke, were both, Jerry Van Dyke was the funniest person I ever met in my life. He just is absolutely hysterical. I can't even begin to tell you the things he would say and do, and he just adored him. And Craig is one of the great actors, I think, of all time. He was great at the comedy that was inherent in the show. And then the show would switch very quickly to a very dramatic scene or a very sad scene or something. And not a lot of actors can do that, make that switch and make both the funny very funny and the sad or touching very touching. And Craig could do that unbelievably well. So they were great and very. Craig received an Emmy Award for that. I was always heartsick that Jerry didn't, but Craig did get one, and that was well deserved.
And then a whole new generation of fans got to appreciate your work as Ma Kent on Superman and in Justice League as well.
That makes me laugh. I'm not sure that people reacted to it that same way, but we had fun doing it. It was it was an interesting thing to do.
Well, we have enjoyed your work for so many years. It's been great for us to have the opportunity to talk with you this afternoon. Shelley, we appreciate you making time for us, and give our best to Mike as well. And stay safe, be well, and hopefully we can do it again down the road.
I hope so, too. And thank you, Rich, very much for letting me be part of your show. I'm happy, happy to do it. So thank you.
Thank you, Shelley. Shelley from Bright.
Time.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.